Welcome to Books on Air, the podcast that you don't want to miss. You're about to get a sneak peek at what goes on behind the scenes with authors. We'll find out their secret recipe for creating a book. We'll tell you where they get their ideas, and you will get the inside scoop on their next project. Want to know more? Great. We'll tell you where to find them on social media. Are you ready? Okay.
I'm ready.
Let's meet the author. Joining me today is Fonda St. Paul. Fonda is here to talk about her novel, Encore, Encore. Fonda grew up singing and dancing her heart out at the early age of 6. In her teens, she performed professionally with the Grand Ole Opry, and she signed her first recording contract with Columbia Records. During her singing career, she toured with such legendary performers as Paul Anka, Paul Revere and the Raiders, Mel Carter, Bette Midler, and the singing group Jay and the Americans. She studied dance with the legendary choreographers Bob Fosse and JoJo. Dancing brought her to the Broadway stage. She performed in such musicals as Sweet Charity and Jesus Christ Superstar. Fonda received the prestigious Repertory Theater Award for her dramatic performance as Barbara Allen in the play Dark of the Moon. Fonda has a vast interest in crime and the criminal mind. She began studying serial killers for 25 years, and she's considered an expert in the field of serial killers. She completed her first novel and screenplay, Smile Pretty Now, in 2006. She's also a creator and a producer of crime reality shows and has produced plays in New York as well as Los Angeles. As a producer, she began Lucy Jean Productions in 2003 and Buck Bunny Productions with Sandy Passman in 2008. Welcome, Fonda.
Hello, hello. It's so wonderful to be here with you and to be doing this. I am so excited to get started and to talk, which I love to do anyway, because I'm Italian. I talk a lot.
You know,
so I'll answer anything you want. Talk about anything you want.
What a rich background you have. I mean, you just bring so many experiences. And I wish, in one sense, I wish that our listeners to our interview had been privy to our conversation prior to our starting the interview. We've been telling stories, and I've been listening to you talk for, I don't know, the last 20 or 30 minutes, and it's just been wonderful. I'm really curious, how did you ever get interested in serial killers?
True story. I was reading romance novels at the time, and I was in between things that I wanted to do with my life. And I was at my girlfriend's house, Madeline Ford, in New York, where I'm from. And she said to me, you know, you're always writing. You're always reading. You're always reading all these books. Why don't you just write one? So I started a romance novel. In about 150 pages of it, I had already killed two people. And I liked it. I thought, well, something's wrong with me. So let me take a look at this. And I went into a whole different arena. I went to an author by the name of Tom Harris, who is the author of Mindhunter, and got involved with his books. It was also Silence of the Lambs. And I started doing this crazy research. And at the time, I had moved from New York to California, so it brought me into an area I knew nothing about, meaning California and where I had to go, because it was so vast to travel, or New York, everything was at your fingertips. And I got involved with psychiatrists that I would just call at random, and they were so kind and helpful that it got me into lock wards, it got me into interviews with the psychiatrist and the doctors that dealt with schizophrenia, and it brought me to a doctor long gone now who was doing a paper on Ed Kemp, the serial killer. And I started talking to him, and he said that the facility he worked at was going to be closing, but while it was open, I was more than free to roam his personal library.
Oh, wow.
And I knew nobody, absolutely nobody yet in California. So I started doing that, and I got so steeped in the criminal mind. And I started asking this wonderful doctor all these questions, and he answered them. And he let me read all of his work on Ed Kemp, who's a notorious serial killer, and Ed's still alive. And I just got so involved, and I started writing. I just started writing it. And I didn't know if I had anything. I didn't know if I was any good. And I showed it to a very lovely man by the name of Ron Coslow, who didn't know that I had written this. And Ron was the creator of Beauty and the Beast, the television show Beauty and the Beast. And my husband at the time was one of the stars. So I said, bring this to Ron. And I said, don't tell him it's mine. He did. And Ron was the one that said to him, I'd like to meet this person. Who is it? And my poor ex said, it's my wife. I don't know what to tell you because she doesn't want you to know. And through him and a gentleman long gone now by the name of Louis LaRusso III, a Tony Award-winning playwright in New York, who I produced with, they were the two that told me, write and produce. You got a great head for it. I went for it flying by the seat of my pants, never knowing what was going to happen with it. And I started reading every solid book I could get my hands on about serial killers. And through them and friends, I got to the FBI. And that's when I got to people like John Douglas and a gentleman whose name was Vernon. I never knew his last name. He wouldn't give it to me. And these are the gentlemen that started behavioral science. That is now all computerized. It's not anything like, you know, what you see on TV, Criminal Minds. But they were the gentlemen that started this, and they were very helpful to me. And through them and all these other people that took the time, you know, with a girl that didn't know what the hell she was doing, but they brought me through. And that's what started me on it. And everything else, I just flew with my memory and with my imagination, which is very vivid, and I started writing. I made mistakes along the way. I think every writer does, especially in their first couple novels. But I enjoyed the process so much. And it brought me a tremendous amount of peace, which is funny because of what I write about.
I mean,
you know, you're in such turmoil when you write it. But
the
end result, it brought me a lot of peace.
I have to say that Encore, you were kind enough to send me a hard copy of the book, which is an absolute delight for me. Often I don't have that hard copy. And we talked about how valuable some of us really think those hard copies are. And I remember opening the front cover of the book and had no expectations, no knowledge of what to expect. And I looked at the prologue and I began to read. And you had me from the moment you started to write. Your style is extremely compelling and very visual. And I think your background in the theater comes through because you create such a wonderful visual scene. This novel is set in the Dakota. And if there are people in our audience who don't know what the Dakota is, it's the building where John Lennon lived and was assassinated in front of. You live next door. Tell me a little bit about the Dakota and why you chose that as the place where your main character lives.
The Dakota to New Yorkers is a place where you want to live. You just want to live there. It's this gigantic building that just takes your breath away. It just takes your breath away. And I just walk around the block and just stand there and look at it. Then I would go across the street and sit on one of the park benches and just look up at it. It's just magnificent. And the history behind it is magnificent. And all the people that live inside with all their stories and everything. And I was fascinated with it. And so I was determined in some way to get inside that building, even if it was just in my head. And the people that ran the building were very, very helpful for me. They would tell me all kinds of things about the building, what to look up with the history of the building. And that's how I got so involved with the Dakota. And the doormen out front, there were about three or four of them behind gates. They got to know me so well that they would just let me roam where I wanted to roam. And at one point in New York, you traveled by either subway, which I detested going underground, or you traveled by cab, which was always very expensive, or you walked Well, the other way to travel was by motorcycles, which I had at the time. We had two Harleys, and we parked them in the Dakota parking lot, which cost more than our apartment. But they were safe there, and we were right there to pick them up and go riding. And that's how I got to know, believe it or not, John Lennon, who would walk around with Yoko in the morning, as I told you earlier. And very early they would be up, and I was always up with my pugs, and I would be sitting outside on the stoop. And they would come around the corner, and he would always play with my dogs. She would keep walking, and she'd stop midway and wait for him. And I don't think I ever heard her say a word all the time that I would see them. And he would just play and play and play with them and talk to them in this beautiful English accent. He's a lovely, lovely gentleman, very kind and just loving. And I just got so involved, and we would talk, and he would get up and walk away, and I'd see him later in the day, or I'd see him the next morning. And I got so involved with the Dakota because of that. And unfortunately, the night he got assassinated, I caught that whole scene, which has stayed in my head my whole life. And that ended a whole era in New York. But the building got so much play, because this was a building that, even though it sat there so regally and majestically, people respected the people inside and kind of left it alone. But after that, it got so involved with people hanging out and the flowers and the gates. It lasted for months. And imagine in Central Park, directly across the street in Strawberry Fields, that you couldn't even walk the block anymore. Now it's gone back to, you know, people just kind of walking by it and looking up and everything. And some of the people I knew there, like Laura McCall, are gone now. But it's a magnificent, majestic building. And I think anyone that lives in New York, anyone that visits New York, they have to go there and just look at this, because it's history. History in the making. And there'll never be another building like it. Never happened.
I had no idea it was so old. I didn't realize that it was built in the late 1800s. And there were, you know, all kinds of the man that built it. You have a little history at the very beginning of the book that I thought was really, really terrific and informative. Let's give the listeners just a little overview of Encore. It's so exciting and such a wonderful mystery and serial killers and stalkers. And let's give them a little overview.
Would you like me to read something from it?
Oh, I'd love it. That's a great idea. Please.
Because I think what I'll read is very short, but it kind of gives a whole kind of look at the book. I think it does.
I like it.
Okay. His breath smelled of warm, creamy creme brulee as he brushed his lips against mine. I kissed the snowflakes off his eyelashes, and I smiled against his lips. He kissed the top of my forehead ever so softly. His tongue tickled my right ear and trailed down my throat to the top of my coat collar. My head went back in ecstasy, and when it came forward, there was a halo of snow around the crown. He lightly brushed the remaining snow off with his gloved hand and smiled. "You are so beautiful," he whispered. I returned the smile, and I took his arm as we continued our walk, in silence, up Central Park West. It was close to 10:30. Even though this magnificent city was known as a city that never sleeps, as a song so elegantly states, there was nothing more mystic and spectacular than New York City at night in any season. We walked on the park side in a winter wonderland of snow covering the ground like a big white velvet blanket. The fairy lights surrounding the Tavern on the Green restaurant peeked out among the trees, casting a soft glow to the cold winter evening. We were just two lovers, stealing those last few precious moments together before we parted ways. "Where did you tell him you were going?" he asked. "Out to dinner with Andrea," I sighed. "I called her this morning and reminded her not to answer the phone." "Will he be up when you get home?" "Hard to say. He's scheduled for early surgery in the morning." "Well, what about Abby?" "Well, she's at her mother's for a few days." Well, we both nodded. "You're shivering. I'd better put you in a cab." "No, no, no," I said rather urgently. "I'll be fine. It's only a few more blocks." I put my gloved hand in his pocket for additional warmth. He smiled and he pulled me closer. I looked up and noticed we were at 69th Street in Central Park West. I closed my eyes for a brief second, and when I opened them, tears had formed in the corners. The thought of letting him go just tore at my heart. "Hey, you're crying. What's wrong, love?" he said, gathering me closer. "I just hate to leave you," was all I answered, and I brushed the tears away.
Yeah, I know, me too. My home, the famous Dakota, also home to John Lennon, Yoko Ono, Lauren Bacall, and a host of other celebrities, including the super rich of the business world, could be seen a mere block away, standing in all her majestic glory, awaiting my return. He pulled me into his arms and he kissed me deeply. I hate to leave you. I can't stand thinking that you'll be sleeping with him tonight and not with me. That his kisses, not mine, will wake you in the morning. The last kiss left me breathless and dizzy. Just as I looked up, a cold, bitter wind greeted us, and the snow began to fall heavier. The cutting chill brought me back to reality. I looked at him for the last time and saw surprise register in his eyes as a knife penetrated his stomach. He gasped only once as I pulled it straight upward. It was quicker that way. I didn't want him to suffer like the others. He was just too special. I backed him onto the park bench, just two lovers stealing another kiss. With my help, he went down slowly. I withdrew the knife. Now it was my turn to kiss his forehead, already slick with sweat. I touched his face and I turned away. I walked a block, tossed the knife in the park. I removed my gloves and put them in a plastic baggie in my purse to be dealt with later. I looked up and the Dakota beckoned me back to my charmed life.
Fonda, when I read that, I just had chills. First of all, it's a female serial killer. I was so surprised. You had me in that prologue, and I know that you have also just reached out through our venue here and grabbed people by the collar and shaken them and said, you need to read this novel. It's available on Amazon. And I want to make sure that they know the title and that I spell your name so they know your name specifically. The title of the book is Encore, Encore by Fonda, F-O-N-D-A, Saint, abbreviated S-T, period, Paul, P-A-U-L. Now, you put that in the search feature at the top of the Amazon site. Click on it, and it brings it right up to Fonda's book. In the upper right-hand corner, when you look at the book cover, there's a little indicator that says, look here. If you'll click on that, the book opens, and you can see an excerpt that's really an excellent excerpt. Part of it is just what you read. This is so exciting. Are you anywhere else?
I appreciate that.
Do you have a website that they could also look at, Fonda?
Oh, sure. Sure I do. It's my full name, FondaSaintPaul.com. And it kind of has a little, you know, information about what I do, who I am, other books I've done, other projects I've done. I have a tendency not to update it as quickly as I should and as often as I should. It needs an update, but it's got enough there for people to take a look at, you know, and they can get in touch with me by email or, you know, however, it shows everything there.
You're also involved.
It'll give them enough information.
It does give a lot of information, and it also goes into your background a little so that I use that. I went to your website, and that's part of what I used to create the introduction. And I really think that your rich background and your knowledge, your firsthand knowledge of the city, makes such a difference in the way that you write because it's so visual. What's your writing process like? Do you sit down and the movie starts in your head? Do you outline everything before you start? Do you know what your ending is going to be? Tell me what it's like when you start to write.
You know, it's odd. Usually I try to write in the mornings between 9 and 12. I try to write a good 3 hours if I can, if the muse is with me and my mind is, you know, moving. And then I take a break. I do what I have to do for the day, and then I come back to it. If I can't write anymore, I start to edit what I had written previously. But in the middle of this pandemic, everything has changed. So I write when I really get my mind starts moving, and I get that urge where my mind is already writing in my head, and I can't talk to anybody. I can't make sense of anything, and I just go and I start writing. I write two different ways. I'll write on the computer, which is all I can do on the computer because I don't know anything else about it. Or I write longhand. Sometimes I will outline. And other times I'll do about 100 pages and then go back
and really see how involved I am in this story. And then I make an additional outline, and then I move from there. I'm an insomniac at times. So sometimes I'll get up 2-3 in the morning, and believe it or not, that's when I really do my best writing, I feel, because everything is silent. My dogs are asleep. The world is silent. I miss the New York noise that used to keep me going, but I can write better, and I just start writing then, and I come up with some fabulous things. I keep paper by the bed because I wake up in the middle of the night, something will hit me, and I'll write it down, because I've learned if you don't, you're never going to remember it the way you first thought about it, and that's always the best way, is your first thought. And that's what I do. That's what I do. I work with an editor. Unfortunately, the gentleman I've worked with on 3 books has passed away recently, so I have to find someone else. But editors are very important to the writer, and you have to get the right one. And God rest his soul, Larry Lederman was phenomenal because he was from New York, and he got me. You have to get someone that understands the writer because they'll correct everything you write. And being a New Yorker, I write a lot of slang, especially with my cops, who I adore. And they're patterned after 2 very important people in my life. And so Larry never changed my wording. He would move around sentences maybe, but he knew what I was saying. And being a New Yorker, I wanted to give the readers an idea of what people sounded like in New York. We're a whole different breed of people when we speak. And so I wanted to give them that New York feel. I wanted to really make the writer feel they were in New York City and they were right in with these people. To me, the best compliment you can give a writer or an actor, for that matter, is telling them, I lost myself. I didn't even know I was reading a book. I didn't even know I was watching a movie. I didn't even know I was at a play. That's the biggest compliment you can give them, because then we know we did our job. So when I'm writing, I'm in New York. I'm not in L.A. I'm back in New York City, back in the city I knew when I knew it. And I'm writing it even in present time. I'm right there. And I do an enormous amount of research. And I know so much about this city that when I'm, you know, stuck on something, I know who to call, and I get the whole visual I need to give that to anybody who reads my books, because I want them there.
You do exactly what you just said. It was perfect with the description of the snow, the description of the people walking down the street. It was a really perfect description in your prologue.
Good.
Are you doing social media at all, Fonda?
I do mostly Facebook.
How could our listeners find you?
Go to Facebook. You'll see me right there. I'm all over Facebook, and they can... I don't keep separate pages, you know, like a private page. I'm just there, and people get in touch with me, and fans, I have a great fan base. They get in touch with me, and friends, and that's how my book gets circulated, really. I tell them I'm writing, and I give them maybe a little excerpt or a little idea of what the book's going to be about, and I go from there. It's really worked for me, Facebook. It really has, and I have so many New York friends on there and so many author friends that we've never met each other, but we're author friends because we write, and our books get traded back and forth, and that's where I go. I did try Instagram for a while, about a year or so, and it got very strange with other people that started writing back to me, and I thought, I'd better get out of this. But I'm going to do a whole different kind of media hit for my next 2 books. I have 2 books I'm writing now. And so I'm going to do 4 and 5, which will be my 4th and 5th novel. They're going to come out together.
Excellent.
And, yeah.
Well, our time together, unfortunately, you and I know we could both talk for hours and hours and hours.
Oh, days.
I know. I have enjoyed you so much. This has just been absolutely delightful.
Thank you.
And I always like to let the author have the last word about their book. Now, your book is exciting. I mean, it's filled with action. It's filled with drama. It's intrigue. There's a stalker. It's a very exciting novel. And you've succeeded in pulling the reader right in. What do you want your reader when they either literally close that back cover for the last time or metaphorically close it for the last time, what do you want them to take away? Do you want them to just feel like they've had a really great read and escaped to New York for a really exciting time and a little bit of scariness and chill up my spine? Or is there a message that you want them to take away?
There's two things. One, I want them to feel they've been on a trip, that they've been someplace different, and that they've learned you can't trust that many people. Because even though they're fiction, they're based on 25 to 30 years of true research of the serial killers I've interviewed, of the wives I've interviewed. So you can't trust anybody. I want them to take the fact away that you have to be careful. And that they just did this trip and found out what lurks behind certain people and their stories. And I want them to have enjoyed it. Even though it can frighten them, I want them to have enjoyed what I wrote and what I gave them, because I consider it a gift. The second thing I want them to walk away from, in every book when I thank people, I always say something about dyslexia, because I'm extremely dyslexic. And yet, I'm going on to my fourth novel. You can do anything you want to do. Because I have read these books in public. I have done book readings all over. And people come up to me and say, you know, I'm dyslexic and I've always been afraid to do this. I started this later in life. And to me, you can do anything, no matter what you may have dealing with in your life. You can do anything you put your mind to, no matter what you have. And I want people to take that with them, because I never have let anything stop me. Nothing. And writing was really the hardest thing for me to do, you know, being dyslexic. It was very difficult to stay focused and just the words. And I think people need to know that there's nothing that should stop them from a dream they have. And I lived my dream. I enjoy what I do.
Well, listening to you, and listening to you read, and knowing what you've accomplished in your life, surely if someone is dyslexic in our listening audience, you have given them hope, and you've given them great ideas, and you've given them a fabulous role model. It has just been my absolute pleasure to talk with you about Encore, Encore today. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Oh, thank you. I've enjoyed it immensely. I really have.
Remember,
thank you.
Certainly. Remember that you can find Encore, Encore by Fonda St. Paul on Amazon. You've been listening to the Books on Air podcast brought to you on webtalkradio.net. Don't forget that you can also hear this podcast on iTunes and iHeartRadio. I'm Suzanne Harris. And I hope that you'll join me for our next Books on Air podcast. Remember, you never know who you're going to hear. Thanks so much for listening.